It's in chapter 13, the story about Samson. And Samson is a very interesting character in the Bible. He's one of the most fascinating characters, I think, in the whole Bible. He's very unique. Now, he's basically the final judge that we're going to see out of the 12 judges that are listed in the book of Judges. The final judge is Samson. And really, God goes into more detail with Samson's life than any of the other judges. Actually, four chapters are devoted to Samson's life. And here we see Samson's parents are visited by this angel that's telling them about this young man that's going to be born unto them and how to raise him and how to order him and what to do with him. Because basically, start at the beginning of the chapter there in verse 13, it says, "And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines 40 years. Now, throughout the book of Judges, you see the children of Israel keep sinning against God and turning to false gods and everything like that. Pretty much there will rise up a righteous generation, some righteous judge will lead them and free them, and they'll all be worshiping the Lord. But then what will happen is the children and the next generation will rise up and, you know, forget all the lessons of the past and go after other gods and so forth. Well, then God will put them into bondage and into slavery to the nations around them. Well, at this time, the Philistines are ruling over them. And actually, it's been that way for 40 years. So for 40 years, the Philistines rule over them. And for 40 years, they're under bondage. They have to pay all kinds of taxes to them. And they don't have their own government. They don't have their own leaders. They're basically just enslaved to the Philistines. So this man of Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name is Manoah, his wife's barren. She can't have children. They've been trying to have children for a long time, and she's not having children. Well, this angel comes and tells her and says, you know, you're going to have a child, and here's what this child's going to be. He's going to be a very special child, and he's going to be a Nazarite unto God from his mother's womb. Now look at verse 7, because it's interesting what he says here. "But he said unto me, Behold, thou shalt conceive and bear a son. And now, drink no wine nor strong drink, neither eat any unclean thing, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death." Now that's a great verse right there to prove that life begins at conception. He said, you're going to conceive, and he said, and then that child is going to be a Nazarite even in the womb. From the womb, not from his birth to his death, no, from the womb unto his death. Therefore, because the Nazarite was not to eat any unclean thing or drink wine or strong drink, as the mother, you know, whatever you eat as a mother when you're pregnant, it goes to your child. Your child gets that nutrition. Your child gets fed from what the mother eats. And so therefore, God is saying that even his mother can't eat anything or drink anything that was prohibited to the Nazarite. Go back to number 6. I want to just briefly, before we get into Samson's life, because I really just want to focus on his life, but let's go to number 6, because I just want you to quickly understand what the Nazarite vow is. Now, the Nazarite vow, the word Nazarite, is really only mentioned in a few places in the Bible. It's mentioned in number 6, where God explains what it is. And then it's mentioned in regard to Samson. And really, Samson is the only person in the Bible that this term is applied to. Okay, there are other people throughout the history of Israel who temporarily took this vow upon them, but he is the only one who was basically the permanent Nazarite from the womb unto death. Okay, the only verses that even mention Nazarites besides number 6 in the book of Judges about Samson are Amos chapter 2 and Lamentations 4, and they don't really deal with specific people, and they don't really shed a whole lot of light on this. But in number 6, we see what this vow was. Look at verse 1. "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, When either man or woman shall separate themselves..." So notice that word, separate themselves. "To vow a vow of a Nazarite, to separate themselves unto the Lord. He shall separate himself from wine and strong drink." And, so not only just wine and strong drink. We're not just talking about alcoholic beverage. It says, "And shall drink no vinegar of wine, or vinegar of strong drink, which are not necessarily an alcoholic beverage." It says, "Neither shall he drink any liquor of grapes." And that's not our word liquor. That just means a liquid beverage from grapes. He says, "Or any liquor of grapes." But watch this. "Nor eat moist grapes or dried." So not only could they not drink wine or alcohol or strong drink, they also could not drink any vinegar. And they also could not eat grapes or raisins. The dried grape would be known today as a raisin. Look at the next verse. He takes it even further. All the days of his separation shall he eat nothing that is made of the vine tree, from the kernels even to the husk. So he's saying he can't even eat a grape seed. He can't even eat a part of the vine that the grape grows on. So this isn't just a prohibition of alcohol. This is saying he cannot even eat anything that has to do with a grape or a grape plant, period, in any form. Okay. And then it also says in verse 5, all the days of the vow of his separation, there shall no razor come upon his head, until the days be fulfilled in the which he separated himself unto the Lord. He shall be holy, and shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow. All the days that he separated himself unto the Lord, he shall come at no dead body. And on and on. Turn, if you would, I'll sum this up, but turn, if you would, to Ezekiel 44. Ezekiel chapter 44, toward the end of the Old Testament. So basically, in a nutshell, the Nazarite vow was a temporary vow. Someone would take upon themselves this vow, and I didn't read the rest of the chapter for sake of time, but basically they specify a certain amount of time. They choose, you know, is this going to be for 6 months? Is this going to be for a year? Is this going to be for a year and a half? They lay out a certain time frame, and during that time, they can eat no grapes, drink no wine, drink no strong drink, not come anywhere near a dead body, not be near anyone who's unclean, even if it's a close friend or a relative, just totally separated out. And during that time, no razor comes upon their head, and they also suffer the locks of their hair to grow. Okay? Separated from the rest of mankind who gets a haircut. Okay? Because your average guy gets a haircut, and in fact, God tells us to cut our hair and to keep our hair short. Now, in 1 Corinthians 11, for example, the Bible says, you know, doth not even nature itself teach you that it is a shame for a man to have long hair, but a woman's hair is her glory. The Bible tells us right there that it's a shame for a man to have long hair. It also says that a woman's hair is given her for a covering, and that the woman is to have her head covered, and that any woman praying or prophesying having her head uncovered, i.e. with short hair, which is what the chapter is referring to, because it says that her hair is given her for that covering, she dishonors her head. And that if a man prays or prophesies having his head covered, as in having long hair, he dishonors his head, which is Christ, that the Bible teaches in 1 Corinthians 11. So the Bible's very clear that we as Christians are commanded not to have long hair as men, and women are commanded not to have short hair. Very clear in 1 Corinthians 11, he spells that out. He says if you disobey that, you're dishonoring Christ. You're dishonoring your head, because he said the head of the man is Christ, and if you do it, you're dishonoring your head. Okay, so we are commanded to have short hair. Now, you say, well, wait a minute, Pastor Anderson. Jesus had long hair. No, he did not. And a lot of people will try to say, well, Jesus was a Nazarite. Yep. You know, who's ever heard that before? Put up your hand. You know, Jesus was a Nazarite, therefore he had long hair. Now, what they're confusing is that Jesus was a Nazarene because he was from the town of Nazareth. But he had nothing to do with this Nazarite vow. You say, prove it. Okay, Jesus drank wine, did he not? Jesus drank vinegar. Jesus approached unto dead bodies. He did these things. All these things that it says for the Nazarite not to do, he did many of those things. He did touch a dead body. He did drink grape juice and ate grapes and did all of these things. So that right there is just somebody who doesn't know the Bible telling you, oh, Jesus was a Nazarite, he had long hair. People will say John the Baptist was a Nazarite. The Bible does not say that anywhere. His mother was told not to drink wine or strong drink, but that's something that she shouldn't have been doing anyway. It didn't mention any of these other fruits. It didn't mention all the other things about Nazareth. It didn't mention a razor on his head. None of that stuff. So there's no evidence that anyone in the Bible was a Nazarite permanently his whole life except Samson, which is what makes Samson a unique individual. He is the one man who was a not a Samsonite, that's a luggage brand. He was a Nazarite, okay, from the womb to the grave. I mean, he was the permanent Nazarite, only one in the Bible, okay. Now, look at Ezekiel 44, because the Bible also commanded the Old Testament priests to get a haircut. That's also commanded of God in the Old Testament. In Ezekiel 44:20, let me turn there myself, It says, neither shall they, this is talking about the priesthood, he said, neither shall they shave their heads. So they weren't supposed to go totally bald. They were not supposed to use a razor and make their hair totally bald. He says, nor suffer their locks to grow long. They shall only poll their heads. And poll means to clip short, just to cut it short without shearing it completely. And basically, they're being told to have short hair, not completely bald, and not long haired. Okay? And so that's consistent throughout the Bible, but the exception to that was this Nazarite vow, which was for a temporary time. These men were supposed to not cut their hair, just let it grow for 6 months or a year, whatever, for this certain vow, and that way they could be spotted, you know, because they're going to stand out with this. And then at the end of that time, they were supposed to shave their head completely bald at the end of that, and then offer some burnt offerings and sacrifices. Now look, this is not something that applies today. You say, well, I'm a Nazarite, you know, you grow your hair long. No, because of the fact that the Nazarite vow was associated with a certain series of burnt offerings, you know, and we're not under that Levitical priesthood where we're offering burnt sacrifices. We're not doing these carnal ordinances of the Old Testament. We don't follow those things. Those have been changed. Read the book of Hebrews, read the book of Colossians. And so this is not something for today. This is something that was back then under the law with all the sacrifices and the priests and all that, that these guys would do this for a temporary thing and then shave their head. Now Samson, on the other hand, the unique thing about Samson is that he was told, hey, he's supposed to be a Nazarite his whole life. You know, obviously there's a symbolism there. There's a certain meaning there. I don't fully understand everything in the Bible. I don't think anyone does. And so there's some kind of a significance here why God wanted him to be a lifelong Nazarite his whole life. Okay? Now you remember Paul in the book of Acts. He gets sucked in by some false teaching that had crept in. And basically in the book of Acts, a lot of people are accusing Paul because he's not participating in all the Jewish rituals and stuff, which really he shouldn't have been. And which he had told the Colossians that they need to stay away from, and he had told a lot of other people to stay away from. But Paul made a mistake there, and he got sucked into it, and he actually shaved his head and pretended. And he wasn't even really a Nazarite. He'd never taken this vow, never let his hair grow, never did any of it. He actually deceived and pretended to be one of the ones that had just ended their Nazarite vow and shaved his head and came out of the temple. And as a result, he was arrested and all the different things where he was carried to Rome and so forth. So I don't have time to go into that story. It's an interesting story. But anyway, back to Judges. I didn't want to get too far off on that tangent, but I just want to explain to you what this Nazarite is and explain to you why Jesus was not a Nazarite, John the Baptist was not a Nazarite. That's not biblical. So, Samson was one of the only person that the Bible tells was a Nazarite his whole life. So, the angel comes, he appears unto Manoah and his wife, tells him these things. Then this miracle happens where they offer a burnt sacrifice and the angel ascends up in the flames of the sacrifice. Then Manoah gets scared and says, oh man, you know, we're going to die because we've seen God. Because God had said earlier in the Bible, you know, no man shall see my face and live. And of course they weren't looking at the face of God, they're looking at the angel of God. But Manoah's afraid and she says, well wait a minute Manoah, if God's going to kill us, how am I going to have this child? So if he just promised us we're going to have a child, obviously we're not going to die. He says, oh okay, well then we're fine then. So look at the next chapter. So they're promised this child. This is pretty amazing. None of the other judges had this kind of a birth that was announced like this and all the things leading up to it. Look at chapter 14 verse 1. This is interesting. It says, and Samson went down to Timnath. So he's grown up. He's a man now. And he goes down to Timnath and saw a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Remember, the Philistines are the ones that are oppressing them and ruling over them. And he came up and told his father and his mother and said, I have seen a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me to wife. Then his father and his mother said unto him, is there never a woman among the daughter of thy brethren, or among all my people, that thou goest to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said unto his father, get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines. For at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. Now this is pretty interesting, because Samson is asking to do something that was sinful here. not because there's anything wrong with, you know, an Israelite marrying someone of Philistine descent. That's not the point here. The point is that they were commanded not to marry the heathen around them that worshipped other gods. And they said, look, you're going to the uncircumcised Philistines and taking of their daughter to wife. That's wrong. And his parents are godly people, and they're trying to talk him out of this, you know, marrying of this unsaved girl. Basically going to the heathen and marrying one of their daughters. Now, throughout the Bible, God told them, you know, don't marry the heathen, because they're gonna turn your hearts away from the Lord. And not only that, though, the Bible said that even if one of the Philistines wanted to become one of the Israelites, all they had to do was be circumcised, and they could join the nation, and they could be a part of it. But these were just the total heathen. So, was Samson right to want to go marry a heathen girl? Is that the right thing for him to do? No. He should have, you know, married someone who's of the children of Israel that are worshiping the Lord. But notice verse 4 though. Hold on a second. But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines. For at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. Well, here's the thing. God is going to use this scenario because, and the reason why is because he's never going to end up marrying this girl. You see what I mean? So he had a desire to marry the wrong girl. And so God is going to use this. This is actually something that God's going to allow to take place and go forward. And actually, God wants this to happen. Because God wants there to be a fight between the Philistines and the Israelites. Because they're just enslaved and oppressed. They've been calling out to the Lord for a deliverer. Basically, God wants to use Samson to start this battle. To basically start a fight between him and the Philistines. So God is using this marriage that's going to take place, but it's actually not going to be completed. This proposed marriage is what God's using to start that friction, to start that tension, to start that fight. So here's what's happening. For sake of time, I'll just tell you the story. We'll jump into the Bible in a minute. But what happens is, he goes down there, and you know he meets this girl, he talks to her, he really likes this girl. He talks his parents into it. His dad comes down and talks to her. Well, while he's on his way down to see her on one of these dates or whatever you want to call it, these visits that he's making, on his way down, a lion basically comes and attacks Samson. Well, the Spirit of the Lord comes upon Samson in a mighty way, as it had done at the end of chapter 13. The Bible just says at times, not all the time, but at times, the Spirit of the Lord would come upon him. And he would basically be filled with just an incredible amount of strength. Now, we probably picture Samson as a bodybuilder kind of a guy. You know, and a lot of times Hollywood and movies will make him out as just this huge, muscular guy. But hold on. This is a miracle of God. Because later on, when the Spirit of the Lord departs from him, he doesn't have the strength. He's actually weak, and people are very easily able to bind him and hold him. So I don't think he was just a huge bodybuilder, because that wouldn't be much of a miracle, would it? No, I think he's just a normal guy. I mean, I don't think he was just totally a skinny guy. But I think he's just an average guy, because it's shocking to people. And, you know, if Delilah looks at him and says, you know, where are you getting this huge strength? Where are you getting this power? I mean, if he was a huge bodybuilder, she would just look at him and say, oh, wow, he's a really mighty guy. But no, she's looking at him and saying, wait a minute. How do you do these? How do you have this strength? Because you can't picture just a huge body, but you just got to picture, you know, a normal guy. And yet God gives him this strength to where when this lion comes and attacks him, he literally grabs the lion with his bare hands and tears it in half. I mean, anyway, he didn't have a weapon. He doesn't have a sword. He basically just grabs it by the leg, just literally just rips off its leg. You know, I mean, just picture. He just grabs it and just... It just rips it in half. So it's pretty amazing. So he throws the carcass to the side of the road and goes, you know, completes his mission to go see this girl, okay? So he gets down there and he talks to her, spends time with her. Well, then he's on his way home again and he stops by just to check out that carcass because it's pretty cool what he did, you know. He wants to go back and see, like, where, you know, I got to be able to tell the story. Where did I tear that thing, you know? So he goes and checks it out and it's filled with bees. And bees have basically made a beehive inside the dead carcass of the animal. and there's all kinds of honey in there. Well, he reaches into that carcass and eats the honey because he liked honey. It tastes good, and he wants to get his honey. So he just finished seeing his honey, so he's going to get some honey. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, so he gets his honey, but wait a minute, he was a Nazirite. Was he supposed to do that? He's not supposed to come anywhere near any dead bodies or anything. He's eating honey, and think about how unsanitary this is. He's eating honey out of a dead body. Okay, so that was totally the wrong thing for him to be doing. So then he gets a bunch of the honey and brings it to his parents and doesn't tell them where he got it from. But he says, here, I've got honey. And they're like, oh, wow, great, thanks, son. They're eating all this honey. He doesn't tell them it came out of a dead body. Now imagine this. My wife loves honey. Okay. Imagine if I came over to my wife with a bucket of honey and didn't tell her where it was from. I said, here, honey, I've got this. Here, honey, I've got this honey for you. And she ate the honey and said, oh, this is so good, thank you. What if she found out that it was from a dead body? You think I would ever live that down as a husband? So that's what he did here. So basically, the wedding comes around. He gets married to this girl, and they have basically a 7-day wedding feast, okay? But they're not going to consummate the marriage until the end of the 7-day feast. Okay, so basically the 7 days is leading up to the final consummation of the marriage. And during that 7 days, basically, he decides he's going to have a little fun with the Philistines. Okay, and remember, so far everything's peaceful. The only thing Samson has battled with has been a lion. And they've been enslaved for 40 years or whatever. Well, Samson says, okay, I'm going to do a riddle. He says, I'm going to put forth a riddle to these 30 guests, kind of like they were like the 30 groomsmen. It was men provided for him. It was a big wedding. 30 groomsmen. And basically, he decides this. He says, well, I'm going to give you a riddle, and if you can solve it, I'll give you each a brand new suit, brand new change of clothes, and a sheet. And he says, but if you can't solve it, you're each going to give me a suit. So I'm going to get 30 suits and 30 sheets. And they said, okay, we agree. Tell us the riddle. And let's jump into that part of the story. It says in verse 14 of chapter 14, he said unto them, here's the riddle that he gives them. Out of the eater came forth meat, and out of the strong came forth sweetness. So basically his riddle has to do with his experience with finding the honey inside the lion. It's dead body. So he tells them the riddle, and they can't figure it out. It says they could not in 3 days expound the riddle. And it came to pass on the 7th day, that they said unto Samson's wife, entice thy husband, that he may declare unto us the riddle, lest we burn thee and thy father's house with fire. Have you called us to take that we have? Is it not so? So they basically come to his wife and say, you know, we're going to kill you and your whole family if you don't tell us this riddle, because we don't want to pay up on this bet. And by the way, when people get involved in gambling, they usually get in over their head, and usually they end up doing crazy things to try to pay for it. They end up stealing and doing stuff. So anyway, these people are threatening her. Now, if you read the rest of the passage, we won't do it for sake of time, but they'd actually been trying to get the answer from her from day one. The whole 7 days, they're trying to get her to tell them. But on the 7th day, they're getting desperate. They say, hey, you tell us or we'll kill you and we'll kill your whole family. We'll kill your father's house. So she basically just is begging him and crying. And says, oh, you don't love me, you hate me. Really, they ruined the whole week for him. Because she's doing this to him the whole week. And on the last day, she just will not let it go. She's crying. She's begging. So finally, he's like, okay, I'll tell you. He tells her the riddle. Well, of course, she goes and tells these 30 Philistines. So they come out, and at the point of time, sundown, on the 7th day, where it's about time for him to consummate his marriage, and the whole thing's going to be over, very end of the feast, they come to him and say to him the answer to the riddle. They say, well, hey, what is sweeter than honey? What's stronger than a lion? Well, look what he says to him at the end of verse 18 there. He said unto them, if you'd not plowed with my heifer, you'd not found out my riddle. Now, that's not a very flattering thing to call your wife. I wouldn't recommend that. But he calls her his heifer, okay? But I call my wife honey and sweetheart. I don't use that term. But basically, he gets so mad that he storms out of the wedding. He doesn't go in and consummate his marriage. I mean, he's just mad that his wife has betrayed him in this way, and that, he's been ripped off. And he probably doesn't have the money to pay. I mean, you think he has 30 suits? I mean, who right now could just afford to just go out and just buy 30 suits and give it to somebody? I mean, that's pretty expensive, right? Even if you're going to the men's warehouse where the second suit is $99, you know. And this sermon was brought to you in part by a men's warehouse. Hey, that's expensive. I mean, clothing is expensive. Nice clothes are expensive. Well, he just decides, you know what? I'll show them. I'll give you your 30 suits. He goes down to a different city of the Philistines. He goes down to Ashkelon and just goes and just finds 30 Philistines and kills them and takes their suits off their body. Okay? So this is what starts all... I mean, because they already hate these people. They already hate the Philistines anyway. That's who's been ruling over them and enslaving them. So he just goes down there and just finds 30 men of the Philistines and just kills them and takes their clothes and brings them to change the raiment and says, okay, here you go, I pay up. But then he still doesn't see his wife. He just leaves. He just doesn't even stop. He just goes home, goes back to his parents. He's just mad. He's upset. He's killed 30 people, you know, and he goes home. Well, guess what? His wife that he had married, but she's not really his wife because they haven't consummated the marriage yet, you know. And biblically, a marriage is not valid until it's consummated. You know, there's a vowing that takes place and there's a physical consummation that takes place for a marriage to be a marriage, biblically. Well, he walks away from that. Well, he was just mad. He was just emotional. He wasn't saying, I'm through with her forever. He's just mad. He needs to go cool down. So, a little bit of time goes by, he calms down, and he goes down and says, okay, I'm ready to have my wife now. And they're like, well, no, you can't see her. He's like, why not? You know, I want to see her right now. I want to go into the chamber with her, you know. And they say, well, sorry, we actually gave her to your best man in your wedding, you know, your groomsman. We gave her unto him because we thought you didn't want her anymore. I mean, you stormed out of here, you were mad, we didn't know where you went. So, you know, she was a beautiful girl, so we decided, hey, we'll just give her to the runner-up, the best man. May the best man win. You know, they give her unto him. Well, now Samson's really mad, okay, because now this woman that he loved and wanted to marry, he didn't get to marry her, you know. Which, part of that's probably from the Lord, too, because, you know, God isn't going to bless Samson for, you know, wanting to marry this heathen girl. He didn't allow that marriage to go through. God just allowed this whole situation to pick a fight between him and the Philistines. He's already killed 30 of them. But now he's really mad. He's going to do even more. Let's jump into that part of the story. It says in verse number 3, now they just told him, hey, your wife's been given away, but she's got a nice sister. And he said, no, I'm not interested in the sister. Verse 3, and Samson said concerning them, now shall I be more blameless than the Philistines, though I do them a displeasure. So he says, well, now I feel justified to really sock it to them. You know what I mean? And so he says in verse 4, and Samson went and caught 300 foxes. So he catches 300 foxes and gets them all in captivity and gets them caged. And it says that he took firebrands and turned tail to tail and put a firebrand in the midst between two tails. And when he had set the brands on fire, he let them go into the standing corn of the Philistines and burnt up both the shocks and also the standing corn with the vineyards and olive yards. So basically, he takes these foxes and he lights their tails on fire. So he was not really good with his, kind to animals. Because he basically uses these foxes as like living, you know, torches just to go light these fields. Because they're basically going to run pretty fast with their tail on fire. And they're going to light a whole lot of corn on fire. So he basically just lights their... He takes two of them at a time to be economical. He lights their tails on fire and then throws them into the field. So that they just run around. And I mean, you're not going to be able to stop this fire. Okay? So he basically throws these 300... foxes into the fields and they burn up just a ton of their crops. I mean, it's just a raging fire. I mean, you see how these fires get out of control in California and just dry fields will just burn for miles and miles. So he just destroys a ton of their crops. I mean, this is a big thing. And it says in verse 6, then the Philistines said, who has done this? And they answered, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he had taken his wife and given her to his companion. And the Philistines came up and did what? Burnt her and her father with fire. Which is exactly what was going to happen if she didn't tell the riddle. You know, she told the riddle and she still ended up, her and her whole family got burned with fire. And Samson said unto them, though ye have done this, yet will I be avenged of you, and after that I'll cease. So he basically says, I'm still not satisfied. Even though I've burned all your corn down, he said, that's not enough. He said, I'm going to do one more thing, then I'll stop. Okay? And then we'll be fair. Then it'll be even. So he says, he smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter, and he went down and dwelt in the top of the rock Etam. So basically, he says, well, I'm still not satisfied. So he goes down and just kills him a bunch of Philistines, just gets in a fight with them and just starts killing them. And then he leaves and says, okay, I'm done now. Now we're even. And he goes and dwells in the rock Etam. Well, they didn't think it was even. He thought it was even, but they didn't think so. And so the Bible says in verse 9, and the Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. And the men of Judah said, why are you come up against us? And they answered, to bind Samson are we come up, to do to him as he has done to us. Then 3,000 men of Judah went to the top of the rock Etam and said to Samson, knowest thou not that the Philistines are rulers over us? What is this that thou hast done unto us? And he said unto them, as they did unto me, so have I done unto them. So it's kind of funny because they're saying, well, we're going to do to him what he did to us. And he's saying, well, I'm just doing to them what they did to me. Okay, but this is just going on and on. Now think about this. They've been ruled over 40 years. It's 2011, right? This would be like as if the United States since 1971 was controlled by someone else, you know, controlled by a foreign power. That's a pretty long time. That's before I was born. Okay? That would be like most people growing up, that's all they've known. And they said, wait, these people rule over us. What are you doing? You've killed all these people. You've started this big fight. What are you doing? He said, well, I'm just, you know, they started it. I'm just paying them back. And there's 3,000 of them. And they're coming to get Samson saying, look, we're not going to start a war over this. You know, you need to stop. So it says in verse 12, they said unto him, we are come down to bind thee. They're basically saying, these 3,000 guys are saying, look, we're going to arrest you. We're going to bind you. And we're going to give you over to the authorities because we don't want our whole nation to go to war over this. He said, we're going to deliver you into the hand of the Philistines. Verse 12, at the latter part, it says, and Samson said unto them, swear unto me that you will not fall upon me yourselves. And they spake unto him, saying, no, but we will bind thee fast and deliver thee into their hand. But surely we will not kill thee. And they bound him with two new cords and brought him up from the rock. So he doesn't want to have to fight with them. So he says, okay, just promise me that you won't kill me, and I promise I'll let you bind me, put me in handcuffs, whatever, arrest me. So basically they get him, they bind him, they promised him, hey, we're not going to hurt you. We're just going to turn you over to the Philistines. So they get him all bound up and everything. And they take him and turn him over to the Philistines. And it says in verse 14, and when he came unto Lehi, the Philistines shouted against him. So they see him and they're starting, ah, there he is! You know, they're all mad. Well, all of a sudden, the Spirit of the Lord comes upon Samson. And he has this mighty strength. He basically just rips the ropes off his arms as if they'd been flax. Just like it was just string. He just tears it like it's nothing, like he tore that lion in half. And basically, he doesn't have a weapon. You know, he jumps off the wherever they had him bound. He jumps off, and he doesn't have a weapon. Okay? He's just totally empty-handed. He just ripped off the cords. And he's looking for a weapon. He sees the jawbone of an ass. So basically, this is like a, you know, a donkey's, you know, jaw or mandible or whatever. He basically just grabs this bow, and he's going to use this as his weapon. So he doesn't have a sword, he doesn't have a spear, anything. He just uses this bone and just starts just bashing people in with it. Now, here's the amazing thing about this story. Because it says he found a new jawbone of an ass and put forth his hand and took it and slew 1,000 men therewith. Now, this is what's unbelievable about this. Now, keep in mind, they're in a mountainous area. They're in the rocks. So it's not like he's just, you know, out on a battlefield. He's got 1,000 guys coming toward him. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But he's in this rock, Etam. He's coming down from this mountainous place. So it's probably a very narrow way where he can just face a few of them at a time. But the thing that's unbelievable about this, like if you were just talking about mortal man, just a normal guy, without this supernatural power that Samson had that was given unto him, you're not going to have the stamina. You know, like, even if you could defeat each of these thousand guys, and even if you're only facing one, two, three of them at a time, you're not going to have the stamina to keep fighting long enough to kill a thousand men. Okay, but that's where his strength, you know, where the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, he had this unbelievable strength where he could just keep fighting. And they just keep sending more guys, and he just keeps killing them. And they keep sending in more guys, more guys. And they just can't defeat him. Finally, they just retreat. I mean, before one man. Isn't that amazing? I mean, finally, they just give up. It's just like, or maybe there were only a thousand of them, but there were probably more than that if you look at the story. Pretty much, they just give up and just, you know, they just flee because there's so many corpses, there's so many dead bodies that he has basically killed a thousand guys with this job on his ass. And it came to pass when he made an end of speaking, verse 17, that he cast away the jawbone out of his hand and called the place Ramath Lehi. And he was sore athirst. You know, you're going to be thirsty after that kind of an exertion. And called on the Lord and said, Thou hast given this great deliverance into the hand of thy servant, and now shall I die for thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised? So he's trying to escape. He's got to get out of there, though. You know, he's killed all these guys, so he says, you know, I need something to drink. Because basically his humanity returns to him, and it's, you know, he's got to get something to drink. And so God performs a miracle. The Bible says God clave a hollow place that was in the jaw, and there came water thereout. And when he had drunk, his spirit came again, and he revived. Wherefore he called the name thereof En Hakkori, which is in Lehi unto this day. And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. Now chapter 16 is the final chapter here in the life of Samson. Here's where we're going to see his downfall. Verse number 1 says, Then Samson went to Gaza and saw there an harlot and went in unto her. And it was told the Gazites, saying, Samson has come hither. So, he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. Basically, he judged Israel for 20 years while the Philistines are reigning over them. Okay. Toward the end of that time now, we see Samson go in unto a harlot. Now, that's a really bad thing to do, isn't it? He's going to a prostitute. Now, I think sometimes we give Samson a bad rap that he's just constantly doing stuff like this. I don't know that he was constantly doing stuff like this. All we see is that at one point he wants to marry the wrong girl. That falls through. You know, years and years go by. We see him, you know, hopefully this wasn't a pattern with him. I don't think it was, because he was a righteous ruler that was judging them, and the Spirit of the Lord was upon him and so forth. I don't think he was just a rotten guy at all. I think he was a great man. I think God speaks very highly of him. So I think this was just him. Because we don't see anything like this in his character necessarily before this, but toward the end of his life here, he basically, or, you know, his short time, but his lust or whatever causes him to do this, you know, and he's going to go to this prostitute. So he sees this prostitute, he goes into her, and again, it's a Philistine. He's in Gaza, which is a city of the Philistines. Well, when he's in with this prostitute, the Philistines get word of him that, you know, hey, because this guy's a wanted man. They've never settled this score with him, and they want to settle with him. They find out, hey, he's in Gaza. He's with this prostitute. And it says, they compassed him in and laid wait for him all night in the gate of the city, and were quiet all the night, saying, in the morning when it is day, we shall kill him. Now, this is a walled city. So around the outside of the wall, you know, our guards and so forth, and it's locked up at night. They shut the gates. Nobody goes in and nobody goes out all night. Then in the morning, they open the gates. So basically, when they find out that Samson is behind enemy lines, he's in Gaza, okay, basically what they do is they lock up the gate and shut it up and say, hey, he can't get out. He's trapped. He's in the city. It's walled up. There are guards at other points. And the gate is totally shut. Hey, when he wakes up, we're going to kill him in the morning. We'll find him. He's got to come out sometime. You know, he's got to come out eventually. We've got him. So it says, And Samson lay till midnight, verse 3, and arose at midnight and took the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts and went away with them, bar and all, and put them upon his shoulders and carried them up to the top of an hill that is before Hebron. So basically, he gets up in the middle of the night and just rips the gate off its hinges. Okay. And then he just decides to just carry it away with, and he carries it miles and miles away. So basically, when they wake up in the morning, the gate's gone. Samson's gone, and the gates, you know, they don't have to ask, well, how did he get out? It's like the gate guy, where is the gate? It's gone. I mean, he carried it far, far away. So he escapes from them at that time. Verse 4, God's just kind of giving us the highlights here of some of the things that he did. Verse 4, it came to pass afterward that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up under her and said unto her, entice him and see wherein his great strength lieth, and by what means we may prevail against him, that we may bind him to afflict him, and we will give thee, every one of us, 1,100 pieces of silver. So that's a lot of money, right? Huge amount of money. I mean, even silver today, what an ounce of silver is like $30. Okay. So 1,100 pieces of silver. And they said, we'll each give you 1,100 pieces of silver. And there's five lords of the Philistines. So we're talking about 5,500 pieces of silver. That's a lot. And if we figure it's an ounce or whatever, we don't know exactly what size. But they're offering her a massive amount of money to betray him. So she decides to do it. So she starts asking him, and she says, you know, tell me wherein thy great strength lieth. Because she can look at him, and, you know, he looks strong, but he doesn't look that strong. You know, what is the secret? There's got to be some kind of a secret. There's got to be some kind of way that he has this unbelievable strength. So he begins to tell her some, you know, phony stories. He says in verse number, I'll just show you a few of them here. It says in verse number 7, this is his first lie that he tells her. He says, well, if they bind me with 7 green withes that were never dried, then shall I be weak and be as another man. So he's saying these plants, if they use these plants to tie up my hands, that's going to take away, that's the one thing I can't defeat. So, you know, she takes these green withes and ties them up. You know, because a green plant, you know, like a dried up plant just breaks, but a green plant, sometimes you can't, it can't be like a strong rope. So he's tied up with this, so she fakes him out. She does a trial run. She ties his hands up while he's asleep, and then says, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. So he just rips it off like it's nothing, and the Philistines aren't there, and she sees that he's lying. And she starts crying, and, oh, you lied to me, you don't love me, you know. Does this sound familiar from earlier in his life? You know, the same thing? So he says, okay, you know, if you get some brand new ropes, ropes that have never been used, and tie me up with them, I'm not going to be able to break those. I'll be weak like any other man. So he falls asleep, she ties him up with these ropes. She says, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. You know, he just, you know, he's kind of like me when I wake up in the middle of the night. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happening. So he basically, disoriented, just rips it off. You know, and again, she knows that he's lying. So she cries and everything. So he says, well, you know, he says, you see my hair? He says, you know, I've got this hair because I've been a Nazarite my whole life. I've got this long hair. And he said, basically, if you take my hair and weave it, and let me show you this. It says at the end of verse 13, it says, he said unto her, if thou weavest the 7 locks of my head with the web. So the 7 locks of his hair on his head. If you'll weave it into like a weaver's loom here, if you'll sew it in, you know, then that'll destroy my strength. So he's kind of getting a little closer to the truth here. Of course, doesn't work. He just gets up and rips the sewing machine or whatever off the table, you know. Well, not a sewing machine, but I don't know anything about weavers and everything like that. But anyway, he walks out with the thing hanging from his head. Didn't work. So she keeps bugging him and crying and whining and just will not let, just nagging and just not let it go. Finally, he just, okay, you know, I'll tell you what it is. And he explains it to her. It says in verse number 17, then he told her all his heart and said unto her, there hath not come a razor upon mine head, for I have been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. And when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, I mean, she could tell it was different this time. She knew it was the truth. So this time she really gets the Philistines ready. They get ready to attack, and she says, you know, Samson, the Philistines be upon thee. Well, first it says in verse 19, she made him sleep upon her knees, and she called for a man, and he caused him to shave off the 7 locks of his head. And she began to afflict him, and his strength went from him, and she said, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. Verse 20, and he awoke out of his sleep and said, I'll go out as at other times before and shake myself. And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. He didn't know that he had lost his power. He didn't know that God's Spirit had departed from him. But the Philistines took him, I mean, just easily defeated him without much of a struggle. And put out his eyes. I mean, they poked out his eyes. They took him, bound him, and poked out his eyes, made him completely blind. And brought him down to Gaza, and bound him with fetters of brass, and he did grind in the prison house. Howbeit, the hair of his head began to grow again after he was shaven. Then the lords of the Philistines gathered them together for to offer a great sacrifice unto Dagon their god, and to rejoice, for they said, "Our God has delivered Samson our enemy into our hand." Now, that's pretty blasphemous, right? You know, they're worshiping some phony god, Dagon. Hey, he delivered Samson into our hand. Now, they're about to realize, no, that's not what happened. Actually, your phony god, Dagon, to do it. The Lord delivered you into Samson's hand. Okay, that's actually what's going to happen. Because basically, they made him grind grain like an animal. Because he was blind and he was just treated like a slave. But they decide to glory and rejoice over this by having a big party. And they say, "We're going to give thanks unto our god Dagon for giving us our enemy Samson." So they get in their big palace hall with Dagon's statue that they bow down and worship, their idol. And they get in there with Samson, and they're going to make fun of Samson. You know, they're going to tie him up and make a joke out of him. Yeah, this is their hero. You know, this is their judge. You know, his stupid judges and his deliverer and everything. Their Nazarite and everything, you know. And he's their hero, just to kind of make a mockery out of Israel and to make a mockery of God and God's people. So they begin to mock him and make a fool out of him. They said, you know, hey, verse 25, their hearts were merry. You know, they're partying, they're drinking, whatever, they're having a good time. "Call for Samson that he may make us sport." And they called for Samson out of the prison house, and he made them sport. So basically they're teasing him, you know, throwing stuff at him, messing with him, whatever. And they set him between the pillars, and Samson said unto the lad that held him by the hand, he's got a kid leading him around because he can't see, "Suffer me that I may feel the pillars whereon the house standeth, that I may lean upon them." Now the house was full of men and women, and all the lords of the Philistines were there, and there were upon the roof about 3,000 men and women. So there's 3,000 people just on the roof alone, let alone all the people that are in the building. So it's a huge gathering. All the lords are there, all the key people, all the leaders, they're all there. And Samson called unto the Lord and said, "O Lord God, remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me. I pray thee only this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes." And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars upon which the house stood, and on which it was borne up, of the one with his right hand, and of the other with his left. And Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he bowed himself with all his might, and the house fell upon the lords and upon all the people that were therein. So the dead which he slew at his death were more than they which he slew in his life. Then his brethren and all the house of his father came up and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the burying place of Manoah his father. And he judged Israel 20 years. Now, at that point, they were free from the Philistines because the Philistines had been ruling over them. But now their whole army, their whole leadership, their whole government is decimated. They're not sending their tax collector this year. I mean, they're gone. I mean, they still existed as a people, but I mean, all their leaders, their whole government, all died. And Samson basically freed his people and delivered them just by that one act of basically committing suicide, basically killing himself and everyone around him by bringing in this building upon them and killing thousands of the Philistines. Now, you say, wow, that's an interesting story. It is an interesting, and there's just a couple things I want to point out. I'm pretty much done with the sermon. I just want to expound that story unto you, but let me just make a few applications here. You know, Samson was not a perfect man. He definitely had his faults, didn't he? I mean, right away we see him, he wants to marry an unsaved girl. Later on, we don't know if this is a pattern with him, but he's going to a prostitute. Next, we see him again in love with this heathen girl. He definitely did a lot of things that were wrong, and he suffered for the wrong things that he did. Because we see he went to that prostitute, he's with Delilah, he shouldn't have been with Delilah. He suffered for that because he had his eyes poked out. He was made to grind like an animal, and really, probably a young man here. You know, he only judged for 20 years. A young man ends up losing. Yes, he defeated the enemy, but he had to lose his own life too, in a ignominious way. He committed suicide. Okay. But what I think that this story illustrates is that, you know, God can use people to perform His will. Okay. God can use a man even with his faults. He still did have faith in the Lord because he's listed in Hebrews 11 as a man of great faith. When he's listing all the great faith and the acts of faith. You know, the lust of the flesh got the better of him. The lust of his eyes got the better. Remember, he saw a woman of the Philistines and was attracted to her and lusted and wanted to have her when he should not have had her. And that happened to him repeatedly. It keeps on mentioning he saw. And what did God do? Allowed his eyes to be poked out. Isn't that fitting for somebody who had a problem with the lust of the eyes? Who had a problem with constantly beholding the wrong women and then giving into that temptation, his eyes were punched out. Look, God is going to bring judgment upon you, even as a Christian, even as a great man of faith. And you know, just because you're a pastor, or just because you're a great soul winner, just because you're a spiritual Christian, just because you're filled with the Spirit of God and read a lot of Bible, you know what? You don't want to let that ever be an excuse for you to live a loose lifestyle. Because Samson was a powerful man. He did a lot for God. He preached the Word of God. He judged and ruled Israel in righteousness. But that didn't matter. When it came to his sin, that's what brought him down. That's what was his downfall. And so we ought never to think that our spirituality or our Bible reading and soul winning is somehow a balance of sin in our life. That we can excuse the lust of the eyes. And look, Samson was a great man. He's a powerful man. I don't think there's anybody in this room where the Spirit of the Lord has come upon them in such a mighty way as Samson, in any way in this, you know, of this caliber that we read about Samson. But yet, if he could fall into this sin, the Bible tells us that we should take heed. Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. And so we ought not think, oh, I can look at these billboards, I can look at the magazines, I can look at all the TV shows with the scantily clad women, and it's not going to affect me. Well, it affected greater men than you. And it affected greater men than me. It affected David when he lusted after a woman with his eyes. What he saw, lust conceived, and it brought forth sin, and sin, when it's finished, bringing forth death. And so if it got the best of Samson, the lust of the eyes, if it got the best of David, it could get the best of us. So we don't want to make the mistakes that Samson made of indulging our eyes, indulging our lust of our flesh. And I want you to see from the story the divine justice that God always carries out, where he always seems to balance the scale. He always seems to recompense sin. You know, he lusted with his eyes, he had his eyes put out. The Philistines were dominating the children of Israel, enslaving them, abusing them. Well, they got what was coming to them. Everybody in the story pretty much got what was coming to them, unfortunately. And so God can sometimes use people who are imperfect. He can still use them in a great way to do great things for him. And he freed his people. Now, stop and think about this question. Why did God send Samson in the first place? Why did God come to Manoah and his wife and tell them that they were going to have a son? What prompted God to even decide that, okay, this son's going to be born, he's going to be righteous and holy and a Nazarite from the womb to the grave, and this guy's not going to touch wine or strong drink, this guy's going to be holy and righteous, he's going to deliver you? What prompted that was the prayers of God's people. They cried out to the Lord. They turned from their idolatry. They turned from their sin and called out to God, and he sent this deliverer. He sent this man that would lead them. But, of course, this man was not everything that he was supposed to be. Wasn't everything he was cracked up to be. And And so, therefore, things didn't really go as smoothly as they could have gone with some of the other judges. You know, Samson could have been an Ehud, who just went in and just took care of business, defeated the enemy, and called it good. You know, we don't really read anything negative about Ehud. We don't really read anything negative about some of these other guys. But Samson wasn't what he was cracked up to be. Think about this. We're all called by God to certain tasks in our lives, right? We're called by God. God, before I was even in the womb, the Bible tells us God knew me. Even before I was in the womb, God knew me. And God had a plan for my life, just like he said to Jeremiah, you know, before you were even conceived, I had a plan, you know, you're going to be a prophet to the nations. God has saved us unto good works, which he has before ordained that we should walk in them. I mean, Paul, even before he started his ministry, God had already laid out a plan and said, hey, this is who I've chosen. He's going to go to the Gentiles. He's going to preach to kings. He's going to preach to all these people. Well, God has a plan for our life too. But it's still up to us what we do with what's been given unto us and what we do with the plan that God has given us. It's not that God has a plan for my life. I'm going to go to Phoenix. I'm going to start this church. All these people are going to be saved. And it's all just laid out. It's just for sure going to go off without a hitch. And there's nothing that could go wrong. It's just a perfect plan. Yeah, it's a perfect plan. But am I a perfect person? No. And see, God has a plan for your life too. But are you a perfect person? No. You have to strive every day to walk within that. And I don't know why Samson made some of the dumb decisions that he made. But maybe he just thought, oh, well, you know, I'm invincible here. God, you know, is going to use me, and I'm in God's plan, and man, I was prophesied a long time ago that I was going to be this great deliverer. But you know what? We really write the book of our lives. Because, yes, God has it all planned out. He's got it all before ordained. But you know, God ordained that he wouldn't touch any dead bodies. He messed that up. God ordained that a razor would never come upon his head. A razor came upon his head. God ordained that he would be pure and live right. And God has demanded of us that we live a clean and godly and righteous life. But it's up to us every day to take up the cross and follow Christ. To choose to subdue the flesh. To deny self and take up the cross so that God can use us in a mighty way. Now, because God's so merciful, God will use us to get people saved and to preach the gospel and to win souls to Christ and to preach the word and to do great things for God. But if we let sin into our personal lives, like Samson did, that is going to be our personal downfall. And our lives will be ruined like Samson's life was ruined. Eyes punched out, enslaved, you know. And really, Samson could have been a really cool guy. Because today, if you say the name Samson, I don't think there's a whole lot of people naming their child Samson, if you think about it. Because a lot of people look at Samson and they don't see him as a great character. Right? I mean, there's a lot of people that say, well, you know, Samson, he was doing, you know, and they really focus on the bad things that he did. Kind of like Solomon. You mentioned Solomon, and Solomon really had a lot of great attributes, but kind of the one thing, that was that one thing about having all those hundreds of wives that everybody seems to focus on. Okay? But that's the way it is. It'll be the same way in your life. You know, you can have every good thing going, but it's that one downfall, it's that one sin that'll take you down. And you say, well, Pastor Anderson, God's using me to win souls. You know, but wait a minute. God used Samson too, but did that mean that he was totally right in his personal life? No. And so we ought never to try to think that, well, because we're doing all these great things for God, and we're serving God, and he's blessing our soul winning, he's blessing all these things, you know, sometimes God could just be blessing your soul winning just because he wants people to be saved. He's just being merciful to the people that you're preaching unto. But you know, you ought to stop and take a hard look in the mirror and say, hey, am I right with God? Am I keeping myself pure? Am I living a clean life here? Because there are a lot of people who've done a lot of great things for God, but they fell into sin in their personal life. And so really, Samson's life can be a warning in that way, to keep ourselves clean. To keep our eyes pure. You know, I've seen a lot of great preachers who did a lot of great things for God. You know, sit down and watch the worst kind of movies. I've gone to the house of a preacher that I knew in the past had done great things for God. And I'd seen great accomplishments of this man. And then I was disappointed when I walk into his house and see the DVD case. And it's all worldliness, it's all garbage, it's all the R-rated smut, you know, and I wouldn't even watch the PG-rated smut that's put out by Hollywood. Because the stuff that they allow in these movies, I'm sorry, God is not the one who came up with that rating system. And there's a lot of stuff in these movies that's wicked as hell, even in movies that have a rating that say, oh, bring your 8-year-old. And so what I'm saying is, we need to learn from these stories. This story is maybe a story that's not often told in its entirety. We heard the whole thing tonight. We see the big picture. Great man. And I'd say overall, I'd put Samson up there as a great man. A mighty man. A powerful man. A righteous man. But his one downfall was that lust of the eyes. You know, and also another downfall that he had too was just a little bit of a, you know, he's just a little bit having a temper, you know, not letting things go. He wasn't very good at turning the other cheek, was he? You know, and you can see how things can escalate. You know, and that's why the Bible says, vengeance belongeth unto me, I will recompense. And yeah, he's defeating these enemies because they had enslaved them and so forth, and they were ruling over them. But, you know, when you start going out for vengeance, sometimes there's just no end to it. Well, we're going to do to him what he did that. Well, he's going to do that. You know, it just goes back and forth. You know, we need to just, when people do wrong to us, you know, let two wrongs don't make a right. Just let it go. God tells us to turn the other cheek and to move on. Well, let's bow our heads and have a word of prayer. Father, thank you for this great story of Samson. It's really an exciting story in the Bible. It's one of my favorite stories. And God, I pray that people would go home and read the story, spend a little more time with it this week, chapters 13 through 16, and really get everything that I had to pass over for sake of time. But help us to learn these lessons of this great man. Help us to learn the lesson that, you know, you do have a plan for our lives. Even in mistakes that we make, you can turn it into something good. You can use it for your glory. But God, if we want to be blessed, we know that we have to live an obedient life, dear God. And so help us to not give in to the lust of the eyes, but to keep a clean life and a clean heart and a clean mind. Help us to follow the good example of Samson and to stay away from the bad examples that he set. And in Jesus' name we pray, amen. All right, let's go ahead and sing.